Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I'll be interviewing Brian Berneman. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please leave me a review on iTunes or Spotify. You know, Brian, it's always been interesting to me when I hear of people meditating or practicing meditation and yoga. And I got this thought in my mind until I began to learn otherwise of you have to be in this specific stance or posture in order to accomplish it. But for someone like you who've been, you know, experiencing and teaching and practicing yoga and meditation for years, that's not quite the truth.
Well, it's a really interesting thing because what is the practice of yoga and meditation? And I think that is always the most important aspect of it. It's not, as you're saying, it's not the stance, it's not the posture. It is what we are trying to develop, that awareness, that presence, that connection. And we can do that sometimes with those postures and those movements and the way that we are sitting. And at the same time, we can do that in everyday life. We can do that having this conversation. We can do that working in an office. We can do that when we are swimming, we can do that when we are running, we can do that when we're walking. So it's not so much the external way that we're doing it, it is the experiential inner part of it that is the most important. And yes, those stands, those postures, those, the way that we are sitting is conducive to getting into that state of being. But once we learn more and once we develop more, that is not 100% necessary.
Gotcha. It's almost like, you know, growing up as a kid, before you got on the 10-speed bicycle or mountain bike, your bike most likely had training wheels on it. And then when you were able to balance yourself, it went away.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I think that a lot of times, this world of yoga and meditation and this so-called spiritual world, sometimes it's a little bit foreign for a lot of people just because of where it's coming from and a lot of the perspectives that we've had. Like, I didn't grow up with that, and yet I was open to it. And a lot of times I think that it's about getting people to learn what is it about and what's the benefit of it. And a lot of times, you know, with some of my clients that they play sports, I tell them it's just like being in the zone. When you are playing sports and you're in the zone, when you're doing that, that is the same as meditation. That is complete presence in the moment. So when you hear basketball players, how, you know, like there's just 2 seconds on the clock and they still are aware enough and everything goes in slow motion, that is the same state of being that we talk about when we are talking about meditation. So it's basically trying to train our mind and our body how to get to that place.
So some benefits of meditation, so state of being is one. What are some more benefits?
Well, for I can say on my own experience, I used to be, when I was younger, when I was a teenager, I used to be very stressed out. I used to be very angry a lot of times, especially when driving and there was a lot of traffic. I would get a lot of road rage. And through these practices, I found more peace. I found relaxation. I found that actually now for the last 15 years, I haven't experienced stress. And it's, you know, like I see this when I'm teaching, and I see this, a lot of people have normalized that stress is the way that things are. And well, that's not necessary. We can eliminate stress completely. So by doing that as well, the effect of that is that a lot of the diseases and illnesses that we have nowadays are actually diseases that come from stress. Those are all of the diseases that the doctors don't know exactly what it is and how to deal with them. They are all stress-induced. So when we understand that and we develop more awareness as well, we understand how do we want to live our life. You know, we have more clarity when there's more space, when there's more space to question things, to question, is this really what I want to do with my life? Is going to an office every single day and not even making ends meet, is that what I want to do, or do I want to do something different? And it's not about knocking down working in an office. That can be great. It's about understanding, you know, what do I want to do and what do each person feel like is the right thing for them. And when we do these practices and we come back to a place of connecting with ourselves and the innermost parts of ourselves, then we can start to dig into those answers, or at least use questioning to figure out, is this aligned to what I want to do, to who I am? Is this actions, this way of living, these relationships adding to who I want to be or not? And I think that is really important.
What was the path like that got you into this space that you're in right now? Because you didn't start off in this space. You were a neuroscience?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I started both of them in a sense at the same time. I actually studied meditation before neuroscience, just because my parents, I got into it because of my parents. My parents started to trying to understand themselves a little bit more, trying to develop more of their own, you know, growth, personal growth, spiritual growth, however you want to call it. And I started to see that, and I was interested in that. I thought, you know, like, there was more to life than what I was living. And these things, these teachings, these perspectives and traditions really resonated with me. And when I started to do that, then at one point, you know, I went to uni, and then I'm like, oh, there's this new thing, neuroscience. Back then it was new. And I was like, this seems really interesting to, you know, like from what I was reading. They are starting to prove what these teachings are saying. They are actually going into all of these machines and actually having an understanding of what is happening to our brain and to all of our neural pathways when we are meditating or when we are, you know, like doing certain activities. And I think that in a world that is really important for a lot of people to understand things, that logical scientific perspective, for me as someone that wanted to share these practices and the benefits of these practices, because it has helped me tremendously, I wanted to be able to speak to people and meet them where they are. So speak their language, in a sense, to be able for the people that are not that open to something spiritual because of whatever perspective they hold, then being able to talk to them about the chemistry of the brain, to be able to talk about what happens with our neural pathways when we start to change certain things, what is happening in our nervous system. So all of those things are tools for me that enable better communication and easier opening for people to be able to be more present within themselves, and which practice they want to use, which meditation tool or which movement tool, that's up to each person what they resonate with. And that's why, like, through the last 15 years or so, I've been learning and I've been experimenting with myself to learn more tools so that I can be of better help to people to find, okay, this is not for you. That other tool is for you. Let's do that.
So what happens to our neural pathways once we make a decision to begin to do something else. Like, say, if we're stressed out, like you had stress in your life when you were younger, you said, and you wanted to change that. You wanted to open up to something different, a new calming experience. What happens in our newer pathways?
Yeah, so to understand this, you know, like a lot of times I use streets and avenues. So imagine, and this is actually true for a lot of people, most people, they go every day to the same place and they use the same route. So the understanding here is that it doesn't matter at which age, our brain has the capacity to use the side street, to use another pathway, and we have that plasticity in our brain. So that is the first thing to understand, that it doesn't matter, even if you've been doing the same thing for the last 50 years, your brain still has the capacity for change. Now, that doesn't mean that it's super simple, because there's so much fat on that pathway, on that neurons, that the electricity, that's what it's firing all of the time in our brain, the electricity is going to try and find that pathway. It's the one where there's more fat, that's where it's going to go. Now, the more that we slowly or rapidly, depending on each person and how ready we are for change and which tool we use for changing, we start to use the side street. And we start to use that the next day, and then the following day, and the following day. And suddenly, that starts to become a little bit more familiar. That in our brain starts to get a little bit more fat, which means that now electricity is firing there. So therefore, we start to change not only the pathway in our brain, that comes with the pattern of behavior. So we can change the behavior to change the pathway. We can change the pathway to change the behavior. And the important thing on that is the understanding that we all have that capacity for change, and that it might take some time. You know, like a lot of times people say it takes around 21 days to change a habit. That is because that neural pathway needs to get enough fat, needs to get to be the dominant one in a sense, instead of the one, the previous one that we were using. I would challenge that a lot of times for some people, and I would say that instead of 21 days, there's some people, based on some of the learnings that I've had, that some people take around 70 days to change a habit. So when I work with a lot of my clients, I say this, like, we don't know if this person is actually one that changes after 21 days or after 70 days. So let's aim for 70 days. Let's do this new habit or this new practice consistently with discipline for 70 days. If this person is someone that changes after 21 days, then the last 49 are going to be simple, easy. But if this person is someone that needs 70 days to change, if they only did 21, then the change is not going to be what's needed for that to be the new habitual pattern and the new neural pathway.
So why do some people have a difficult time maintaining that consistency? I know one reason could be, as you just explained, there's the dominant thing is, you know, of course, they're going in that direction already. And then they introduce something different, but they may do it for 3 days, 5 days, and then give up. And that most dominant thing, that old behavior, those old patterns just continue on.
Yes. And you know, there's a lot of reasons why this happens. Different people, different reasons. Yet from a brain perspective, that is literally the case. It's that, you know, like, we didn't give it enough time and space for this new pathway to be the dominant one. So we are just going to revert back to the other one. And we actually depend on each person. And this is why, you know, like, a lot of times through the years, I have worked with a lot of teachers and mentors and coaches, and I do the same for a lot of my clients. We sometimes need someone to keep us accountable. Like, I remember at school, you know, when I was younger, if if I didn't have someone, you know, there checking if I was doing my homework, I wasn't going to do my homework. But if someone was checking in on me, I was doing it. So sometimes, you know, that pressure is what helps some people. It's that pressure of being able to say like, ah, this is actually, someone is keeping me accountable for this and I'm going to do it because of that pressure. And sometimes we can put that on ourselves and we can find that discipline. We can find that because sometimes we can see the end result. So as an example, if I am stressed and I would prefer not to be stressed and I'm like, if I do this this practice consistently, I might get to that place or I will get to that place, then I keep that as my true north. And I know every single day, it's like, ah, even though at this moment, this is challenging and I need to make some effort, perhaps, I know where this is taking me. So I'm going to stick with it. And sometimes we don't know that. Sometimes, you know, we start a practice, like a meditation practice, just because we heard that for some people it was good. And we don't have that true understanding. So it makes it a little bit more challenging.
And how would you define mindfulness?
How would I define mindfulness? I would say there's differences between what now mindfulness is and what a lot of the meditation practices are as well. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is about, it's more the tools that use meditative practices to become more aware of how we can be at each moment, how we're using our mind, how to notice the thoughts, how to notice the patterns of behavior, how to be able to understand what is going on so that we can be more mindful at each moment. We can be more mindful with our experience, we can be more connected with what's happening. In my practice, I use practices of meditation and mindfulness, both of them. I try not to label them too much. Some I use one, some day I use the other one. And with my clients, I do the same. Because at the end of the day, with these practices, the most important thing is the actual experience and doing it more than what does it mean.
And what are some ways people could be helped? Because it's an internal thing that's going on. It's an internal change. So there are thoughts that come in and people recognize them. But oftentimes, they have the response within themselves. So they respond to those thoughts and have a dialogue, and it takes them on this course, this pattern that they've always been on. So in order to break that pattern, when they are aware of their thoughts, they have to just allow it to flow through.
Well, there's a couple of things with that. So the first thing that I want to say, and this is something that I share a lot, is that thoughts are okay. Like a lot of people, when they start meditating and things like that, they say, oh no, I have a thought, or I started thinking and I went with it. And it's like, you know, like perfectly okay. One, that's what you've been doing for your entire life, just thinking and talking to yourself. And, you know, like when I'm like the other day, I was teaching at university, and one of my students was saying that, oh, I started to have this conversation with myself and it lasted like a few hours. I'm like, cool, you know, like that's perfectly okay. That's what you've been doing, and that was the way of coping with that thought. You needed to have that conversation with yourself. You're not crazy just because we all have thoughts in our head. We all have voices in our head. That doesn't mean that we're crazy. And it's perfectly okay to go with it. Now, if we are trying to become more present and not go with the thoughts too much, what we develop is greater awareness to notice, oh, there's a thought there, and noticing thoughts come and go. Just like the clouds in the sky, thoughts come and go. All that I need to do is not cling onto it or not allow myself to be clinged onto it, because I don't want to lose myself in that train of thought. Now, one of the ways of doing that, which is the main way for me and the way main that I bring this with people, is coming back to the body. Anytime that something is happening, coming back to the body, whether that is by noticing the breath that is flowing through the body, noticing the feelings, sensations in the body, or by actually moving so that we can bring ourselves more present in the body. The body is an incredible instrument that most people, at least this is my experience, are completely detached from. I didn't know until I started to do reflexive practices how to feel. I was completely just mind-based, and coming back to the body is one of the biggest antidotes for me to my stress and to be able to get into all of these thoughts.
Because our bodies is a filter. Every experience, emotional experience, it goes through our bodies. And until we release it, it's still there. It's caused that disharmony, as you were talking about earlier as well.
Yes, like our body is super intelligent. Our body is amazing. And there's no difference, you know, like a lot of times we try to make a difference, head and the body or the mind and the body. It's all one. It's all connected. Yet, a lot of times, it's much easier to integrate experience, to process them by connecting with the body. Because as you just said, we feel a lot of these experiences in the body. And the more that we start thinking about them instead of actually feeling them, we don't process them. That is what creates a lot of the challenges that we have. That's what creates, in one perspective, what it's called energetic blockages, and in another perspective, what is called trauma. That is what we store in the body. That is what then creates disease. So by us focusing more on the body, being more aware, allowing ourselves the time and the space to feel the sensations in the body, then we are able to allow that experience, to experience that experience, to integrate that experience, and to continue with our life without carrying that on with us for the rest of our lives, which is what happens usually when we are taking all of this trauma and all of these unresolved feelings with us. We're taking that huge 100 kilos backpack with us, and we're taking that everywhere with us. And that is not a nice thing to have.
And you help people as well with different healing modalities. Would you name some of those?
Yeah, so I use Reiki, which is one of the modalities that most people know. I use a few other ones from back in Argentina that most people don't know, and some from that I learned from Canada, as well as one that perhaps some more people are familiar, which is called Family Constellations. These are all tools that have helped me tremendously. Those are tools that work on an energetic level, that sometimes I know that for some people they are not so open to it, but I always say experience it first, try it out and see. So when I work with that, we can bypass a lot of those things that we were talking about before, you know, like the 21 days or the 70 days of changing habit. Sometimes using one of these tools, this can be automatic.
Wow. So are you on social media?
Yes, I am. I'm either with my name, Brian Burnman, or I'm also through my organization that is Conscious Action New Zealand. So NZ, Conscious Action NZ.
What is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
That you are worthy. Know that you are loved, and know that we need you to be you. You have your own unique gifts and your own unique medicine that you bring into the world, and we need that.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.